You know, it's like you work so hard for so long just to provide for your family, right?
Yeah. Not you, then who's gonna?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then at some point, you'd think you'd get to relax, but no. There's too much moisture, so now I got to redo these fucking cabinets. I got to redo the roof, probably, and then by the time I'm done, I'm running out of money, the kitchen's out of style, and the whole time, all I wanted was a fucking hot tub.
Andrew's paying by the fun points by the hour, so take it
away. TikTok, guys. TikTok.
All right. 3, 2, 1, hitting fake record, and the conversation starts now. Welcome into the podcast, everybody. We're Matt and Bob. We're here to pod. You're listening to the
analysis.
I want Andrew to
Bob,
say it. Andrew, give me a falsetto analysis.
Of royalty today. Usually it's a two-hander. We got a third hand on our cocks here. We got the grand exalted ruler, the leader of the Society for Marital Intercourse. Wait, I wasn't supposed to say that. It's Andrew Papa joining us.
Analysis. Hey.
I think he's trying to get into the animation club.
Yeah, I think this is trip number 2 for Andrew, so he's got 3 more.
We talked about Hacks before.
Yep.
A show I wasn't really into, but took down some Emmys. It was worthwhile. Papa, you brought to us a show called Beef.
Yeah.
Ali Wong, Steven Yeun, David Cho in there. A lot of Asian America. This is getting a lot of good press. It's
97 on Rotten.
Yeah. Good sort of Asian American representation there as well. Two strangers get into a road rage accident that brings chaos into their lives. What spoke to you about this that you wanted to chat with the two hosts of a prestigious movie and TV podcast?
The prestigious, you know, it's so funny, you guys, you know, because I've got 2 kids, so I I do not get out of the house much, so. Most of what I consume is homebound. And I was reading something, and Steven Yeun, unbeknownst to me, I listened to an interview with him, a Michigan guy, had no idea.
I didn't know that
interview
either.
With him, and I was like, oh yeah, he's got this new show, Beef. Yeah, born in South Korea, I guess, and then moved to Canada for like a year, and then like when he was 4, moved to Kalamazoo. And then, like,
hey,
went to Kalamazoo
wait, we hate Kalamazoo. Boo. Boo. Yeah.
3 CMU alums. Oh. Western is trash. But okay. So he lived there.
So anyway. And I've always loved Steven Yeun. And really, the thing that sparked me getting into the show is I love Ali Wong. She wrote a hilarious book like 2 or 3 years ago that I read that, like, it was one of those books where as I was reading it, I'm like laughing out loud reading it, which does not happen. And so when I saw that Steve Yeun and Ali Wong were both in it, I was like, I got to check this out. And there was just something about, like, first of all, the pilot just hooked me right away, which I know we'll kind of, Matt kind of teased, right? It's sort of this road rage that goes awry. And there was just something about the show. It was like the Coen brothers Fargo meets like an Anton Chekhov play, like just two just supremely lonely people, just like deeply lonely people in suburban America who have just had it. And they just happen to be at the exact wrong moment. And then each, like, it's the tiniest incident. How many times have we been on the road and we're like, yeah, screw that guy. But this just leads to this cataclysmic, like, series of events. And it just, the way it went, I was like, I was hooked from the beginning all the way to the end. And I was like,
yes,
I got to talk to the guys about this.
We've all been in that situation where you're boiling with rage and you just say, you know what? Screw that guy.
I think I used different words. Yeah. So yeah, it was funny because, you know, Andrew texted me and he said, hey, you know, I think you guys should talk about the show Beef on your podcast, which to me is saying, let me come on the podcast and talk about the show Beef. And so I hadn't watched it yet. And so I said, yeah, we'll give it a listen. You always give us great suggestions. And so we'll have you come on. And then 40 minutes in, I'm like, what is Andrew identifying so directly with a show about rage brought on by suppressed emotions that forces you to have dark secret adultery in hotel rooms. I'm like, what? There must be something happening in this man's life, but maybe you just, there's the Chekhov in you.
Yeah. The Chekhov is a great call. It's like this dollhouse of just, characters stuck together. Right. And they kind of, get each other's throats just because of proximity, you know, the neighbor watch thing and all that. Yeah.
Right.
You ever see Vanya, Sonia, Masha Spike?
Yes.
That sort of that parody of Chekhov. And I just think it's such a funny play.
Yeah, I actually auditioned for that. I didn't get in, but I auditioned.
Christopher Durang. Well, you're in a safe space, Papa, because everyone that talks on this show has had many failed career moves. But Ali Wong, are you guys up on her like stand-up specials? I've kind of missed them. I know they've been a big deal. Like when she was pregnant, is it Baby Cobra was a big hit for Netflix. Always Be My Maybe. I know that got a lot of kind of buzz. I saw that during the pandemic. That was like, you know, one of those 2019s that kind of got hot in 2020.
I've only seen one. Brecken's really, my fiance is really into her. And so she was interested in watching this show. The schedules didn't line up. And this was actually one that I had to motor through on my own, but she's really excited to watch the show. But yeah, she's kind of this, obviously the stand-up, I guess we'll call it stand-up, but to me, it feels a lot like performance art, the way she structures her show, but at least the one that I saw, the Baby Cobra, but
kind of like a one woman show versus doing straight stand-up.
Yeah, it's different than what I would say, like, you know, stand up to me, a traditional stand up is like a Bill Burr or even like a Seinfeld or something. It's, you know, this is kind of more storytelling. But the semantics of what stand up is, I guess I can't really define. But yeah, I did see one special.
No, what's interesting about Ali Wong, well, here was the other thing that got me into the show. It wasn't just that I'd read her book. It was that, right, I knew she was hilarious. Like, I was like, Ali Wong's, you know, she's funny, at least in the book. I actually haven't seen any of her stand-ups. Her book was great. But, like, when I saw the trailer for the show, I was like, this is a lot darker than what I feel like I've ever seen Ali Wong. I felt like she was capable of. And so that's what hooked me. And then Steve Yoon was from Walking Dead is the big one that everybody knows him for. But he was also in... one of my favorites in the last few years, Sorry to Bother You, the Boots Riley film. He's great in that. And what I didn't realize about Steve Yoon, he's in it. Yeah. But what's funny about Steve Yoon that I also didn't realize until I heard an interview with him, he's a huge comedy guy. Like,
well, he's in I Think You Should Leave. Let's not bury the lead. He's the guy who takes the shit and he uses it. He has the big sloppy mud pie with a small slice. He's Jacob in season one of I Think You Should Leave, the greatest sketch show of all time.
It's not a big deal. You had a big mud pie, had too small of a slice. Then I ate the mud pie. Now my stomach's absolutely fucked.
So, I mean, he already had me, you know, being in that show. He used too small of a slice with a sloppy mud pie.
Got a hands 100%. Check up out there. there they are. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, me and Bob were both really impressed with Minari as well. I mean, this guy who pops up with a sloppy mud slice, and then does Minari, this like amazing Oscar nominated, that went toe to toe with Nomadland. That was the second film that I was, so I guess his thing is kind of like, pissing and shitting, you know what I mean? I mean, he's peeing all over the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. He's shitting in buckets in two different scenarios. So maybe that's
lots of piss and shit. Yeah. And you know, he was also he's the one who gets his brains bashed in The Walking Dead when the Negan guy with the bat, he's the one who has like his, and actually I went back as I was watching it was really hard for me not to think about the scene from Walking Dead because I'd never watched that show, but I saw that scene because people were like, you got to see this. This is crazy that it's on TV. And then I was even Googling the makeup and how they made that scene work. Like there was times when I was watching Beef where I was pausing Beef to get into this rabbit hole of how they did the makeup for Walking Dead. So anyway, that's a whole separate story. It kind of could even feed back into some of our conversations that we had for The Last of Us. But, you know, with this show, I did enjoy it. To me, I always get in these things when things are so hyped to where I was like, five or six episodes in and I'm like, okay, what's the big deal? Because I'm enjoying it. It's definitely quality. And I wrote down like, this is nice symbolism. and it bucks some of these that like Asian families are hot right now. You have Crazy Rich Asians. You have, you know, the Everything Everywhere All at Once. And so it had a lot of like themes about kind of parenting. And I think this actually kind of flips some of that on its head when it comes to stereotypes, when it comes to Asian parents. But then, you know, I think it also had a really engaging story. I think it looks really good. It's A24. A24 is just on fire right now. They are the most credible manufacturers of content, I think. And yeah, I think it's really well performed. Like we've been hyping up the two stars. So I had a lot of wins in the scorecard here. But I was also like at times finding myself Googling makeup from Walking Dead and things like it lost me in certain places, especially when it gets really absurd. And when the cousin gets like heavily involved and there's like heist shit going on. And I was like, OK, this is getting, I get it that they're trying to go, you know, they're trying to show the chaos and where some of this decision-making that these two characters have had kind of lead you. And it's a lot about the consequences of the decision-making. But there was times where I got lost. I don't know. How did you feel, you guys?
Well, first of all, thank God for A24. They're like the arbiters of good movies and I guess production in general. I mean, we talked about Minari. You think about, I mean, I got a list here. Florida Project, The Lobster, Under the Skin, Spring Breakers, Good Time, Uncut Gems, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Moonlight, Ex Machina, Lady Bird, The Lighthouse, Room, Midsommar. I mean, they're just Swiss Army Man, The Green Knight. They have so many
cool
hits.
Movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Just movies that are what, 20 million and under budget, I would guess. Crushing it award season wise and just really like carrying the torch for something other than, IP property, extended franchise, Marvel Universe, big blockbusters. They're really kind of in that sweet spot, swimming alone, God, just like knocking out of the park with this stuff. And so A24, sign me up, whatever they do. So yeah. I was on board with that. The only problem I have is just like Netflix shows, original content. The movies are terrible. I mean, The Gray Man, you know, like everything they come out with now is just like, feels like a pump and dump scheme where it's like it's hyped up so hard. You gotta watch the show. And then you check it out, you know, you binge it, you put in all this time, and then you get to talk about it for maybe a few minutes. People are like, oh, I've already moved on. I'm watching this show now. There's no discourse, no one really discusses anything. It feels like you either catch it you don't really miss anything by not watching it. You know what I mean? Because it's these properties are just like gone from the public discourse so quick. And I just want to ask you guys a question. Would this have been a better 2-hour movie?
That's an interesting thought. You know, I think
because it has moments. I don't want to cut in right away, you know, the episodes 4 to 7 and like it kind of I didn't see the last 3 episodes yet, but feel free to, we'll get into that. It has a great hook, great trailer, pilot. The trailer is definitely condensed episode 1. It really gets you in and it's a good hook. But then it's like Bob was saying, it kind of loses steam, it gets it back, it loses. There's like this cosine curve, and I just feel like it could have been a really trimmed down, solid 90-minute, 2-hour movie.
That's an interesting thought. I mean, I think the narrative is there. And by the way, to your point, Matt, I completely agree in terms of A24. You know, Kevin Smith said once, he was interviewed about movies and things like that. And he was talking about, you know, one of the things that's kind of become, doesn't happen anymore is like that mid-budget movie. So much of film production now is like either shoestring, mumblecore, like barely makes it to Sundance, or it's a Marvel movie. And like he was like, you know, Kevin Smith's a big comic book guy. He's not anti-comic book movies, but he was like, where are the $20 to $40 million amazing movies? And I'll tell you where they are. They're at A24. You know, like they understand that like you don't need hundreds of millions of dollars, and you also don't need shoestring, nobody's gonna see it. You can put an investment in something and really get something out of it. And arguably, I think they did that with Beef. Now, to the point about could this have been a movie? It's so funny because I I probably should have like revisited more of the show before we talked, because I finished it, I don't know, whatever it was, 3 weeks ago or something.
Yeah, that's the analysis delay. It's about 3 weeks. That's typically yeah. But yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Maybe it could have. That's not to say that I wasn't engaged the whole time. I don't know that, maybe there were parts where it dipped in and out for me, but the way that it wrapped up, the thing that was interesting is that Steve Yeun, when he was interviewed, he did say, like, as of the interview that he did, they were like, so is there going to be a season two? And he was like, I don't know, I haven't heard anything. And I was kind of like, I hope there's not.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the ending is so cinematic. It mm-hmm. is such a cinematic ending that I'm like, if they pick it up for season two, it's a cash grab. Like, cash it's not grab. About the art to me. Now, if they did the same thing with Beef that maybe they do with Fargo, where it's they really stick to that limited series of like, this season was about this set of characters. The yeah. next season will be the concept of two people having a beef and where does it go, but it's a totally different aspect that I would buy into. But if they do a season two, I don't know. I don't know. They would have to really like buckle down on the writing. And with the WGA strike, I don't know if I see that happening.
Yeah, right. I mean, that who knows how long that's going to go on and how many productions will be delayed or ended up canceled because of the strike. And then the Directors Guild right after. And then I think
I don't know if this has the fanfare. This, to me, I put this in like a category kind of like White Lotus, where you like things that are kind of in that old school $20 million to $40 million old movie budget, which now they're just making into short limited series. But they're kind of like scratching that itch that we had, that American domestic drama itch. And it's kind of in that space. But I don't know if this has the same momentum as White Lotus. Like when I came into the office after White Lotus finished, like everyone was talking about White Lotus. Like that's going to have, that's going to have the like you talked about like Fargo or some of these things where they have different contained stories with similar themes or under the same umbrella. I don't know if this is that popular. I could be wrong. We'll see. I to answer your question, Matt, I do think it could have been a movie. I think it would have been, I think it actually works better kind of with some more in it. I think it works better as a, I don't know if we would have been able to get in and get out within 2 hours with what they were trying to say, because I think there is a lot of value here. And I really like I talked about the themes earlier, and I really liked the idea of like well-rounded happiness is hard, if not impossible, to achieve. And you know, a lot of times some of the things that are your strengths are also going to be your weaknesses when it comes to like a desired complete life. And so like you're always going to be wanting and longing something else. And I think these characters are in their own ways, like experiencing loneliness, but from different perspectives and different angles. Yeah. And the pursuit of the whole happy life ends up kind of rotting their experience altogether. And so I think they go about it different ways, but they each make bad choices, but they each are good people in different ways. And you see that. And so that it's like, it's this duality that's constantly pulling back and forth. And I think you need the episodes to see that. Like, I don't think we can do that in a 2 hour narrative.
Well, yeah, it is nice that like, you know, they come across as enemies, but then obviously they realize that they have a lot in common and you have to root for both of them. I did kind of like when they kind of came together as like almost a team up, like, let's bury this beef. I'm trying to do this. You're trying to do this. And I think they both realize that they actually have more in common than they have to be sort of enemies for. So I just finished episode 7, which is where we see the jump forward. Things have improved for both people and they're kind of riding high. And then we kind of see some of the undercutting from Ali Wong's mom and her family life starts to turn. And so that's where I'm at now. And there's 3 episodes left to the finish. But I mean, do you guys want to like sell me on the end? Or I mean, let me just read this real quick. The creator, Lee Sung-jin, has just confirmed a new season will bring us a whole new cast of characters and a brand new story with a different flavor of beef. So there you go. If that ends up going, and obviously it's like on hiatus, but the idea is to do.
Colin Farrell has just entered the chat, and so has Matthew McConaughey and Rachel McAdams. So
there we go. All right. Yeah, let's get a True Detective beef style.
Oh, Mahershala Ali just called too. Sorry, excuse me.
Time is a flat circle. That's all that is. Cool. I mean, you guys want to chat like the wrap up
So Hayes, you're kind of at a place. It's about to launch again. So everything, obviously, it's not just going to end on this. It's just not the tone of the show, and the show switches with a lot of tones. It's kind of this like wacky, goofy comedy. There's like some. It's never. I think you should leave, but you know, it has lighter moments, but then it's very dark, and there's kind of some very sinister humor as well. It eventually the cousin comes into play in a big way, the kind of gangster cousin. And there's a whole scene towards the end where the rich kind of token white woman who is buying Amy's company.
Yeah, Jordan, right?
Yeah, they basically, there's like a house heist moment that comes into play. And there's almost like a panic room situation, which kind of like very intensely she gets caught in the panic door and it splits her in half. There's a whole shootout that happens. Like it gets pretty wild. There's another car chase, but instead of Danny chasing Amy, Amy's chasing Danny. They drive off a cliff. They're marooned in the wilderness for multiple hours, if not like a day. Like
I want to unpack that desert scene.
Yeah, go ahead.
At some point.
We'll get there right after this. So here's where I'm at. Episode 7 ends. He's driving his family from the airport. Steven Yeun picks up his family. He goes and grabs his brother, who's just admitted to fucking George's wife. That blows up. They're driving up to the house. The house is in flames. We keep flashing to this mound of dirt and.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking at. My thought was he did the wiring, so maybe he fucked up the wiring because he's an idiot and he blew up his house. But I think we're meant to believe, I think they tease that it's arson.
Yeah, he thinks that she
raced
arson.
There. Yeah,
mm-hmm. He thinks that she's created arson, but it actually is in fact that he had bad wiring, which is going to come against his construction company and financially cripple his company based on like faulty malpractice from like what happens in that.
Okay.
The flashes of the dirt are actually two intertwined feathers, kind of like almost like spooning each other, you find out, which later in the season or at the end of the season, I think is supposed to symbolize the two of them in a hospital bed, kind of like comforting each other in their own loneliness and misery, because eventually they're marooned out in the wilderness. They have this giant car crash. They literally drive off a cliff. Their life goes off a cliff, quite literally. And then they're trying to survive and they're trying to get back to civilization, even though they know that their lives are going to be completely ruined when they get back. And they eat some berries and they start seeing the world through the other person's perspective. Both are able to kind of comfort each other. And then as they're kind of coming back, they get cell phone service back eventually, and they're kind of coming through a tunnel. Like it's all the symbolism. It's like all this metaphor happening, but her find, you see other texts start to come back online. And a lot of this show, it's almost like, what was the play, the Marber play, where you're always watching the texts go back and forth? Clive Owen.
Oh, Closer?
Closer. Yeah. You know how you're always watching
Closer?
Yeah, you know, this show does that where you're always like watching like kind of the interchange of people flirting or like texting naughty shit to each other. So anyway, you see all the texts come back online and you see a Find My iPhone. So her husband ends up finding her location and he sees them together kind of in silhouette in the tunnel, and he shoots Danny and kind of like you don't know if it like fatally wounds him, but the final scene is them in a hospital bed, and she kind of like she crawls in the hospital bed with them, and they kind of are spooning each other, so that the feathers are supposed to kind of symbolize that.
Got it. And Andrew, you wanted to unpack like the
so much of that wilderness. Bob, Yeah, Bob, great job kind of going through the main points there. That's exactly the crux of it. What stood out to me was like, you were talking about the cell phone, right? So they end up in this desert. And not only, I think at one point, one of them is like, my God, if I right now, I would just shoot you. And they were like, yeah, well, I would too. And you realize like, these are two people who are at wit's end with each other, right? They cannot stand the other person. They have put each of them through hell. Any world that they return to is just going to be completely shattered, right? Mm-hmm. But in that moment, there is no service. There is no gun. There is no water. There is no food. It's just each other. That's all they have. And so you're right. Yeah, they I forgot about the berries thing. I almost thought, I remember they almost start to hallucinate. And there's actually a point, it's almost like David Lynch-esque, mm-hmm. where like they start talking about each other's backgrounds and the dialogue starts to get like more and more interweaved. And then they start saying the same thing at the same time. It's like very surreal. It's almost like a weird sort of thematic shift where you're like, what is this show? But I just love that by the end of it, it's like they finally are able to recognize the humanity of the other person. But what's, mm-hmm. it was like depressing, but also revelatory, is that it took taking away cell phones, taking away the car, like it took literally putting two people with each other in a moment of desperation for them to be able to go, oh, you're a human. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like there was just something so like, is that what it takes? Like, this is such a weird reference, but there's a comic artist or like a, you know, like a comic strip artist. And he does this series called Small Differences. And he does like the difference between bumping into somebody when you're walking versus bumping into somebody when you're in your car. And like when you're two people are walking by each other and they bump into each other, what do they do? Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to bump into you. Not a problem. It's my fault. But if you put two people in a car, it's like the range just skyrockets. There's something about being in a car and it's like, it's the separation of it. It's all of that. And the thing is like, and this isn't a spoiler at all, Matt, but right, what is the reason that Steven Yeun is in his car in the first place? He's trying to return these burners because he was trying to kill himself.
To kill himself. Yeah.
Right?
And he's done it and multiple so, like, times. And he keeps, that's great.
And so I think Steven Yeun mentioned it. And I think a couple of New York Magazine mentioned it. They were like, this show is about capitalism. And I'm like, that's easy. That's too easy for me for this show. Yeah. Like, yeah, I get it. Late stage capitalism. He's struggling and he's on the lower end of the economic spectrum. She's struggling even though she's privileged and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you could say that about 100 movies and TV shows and plays. It's all about capitalism. But like, to me, it goes a little further than that. It's about the disconnect that has ensued as a result of where we are. And it takes this moment of desperation for two people to finally connect.
Well, I think it's about connection and the pursuit of happiness and kind of, having some, perspective, mm-hmm. Put yourself in another person's shoes and, you know, money is not the cure all. I another interesting thing, this reminded me of, so Tarantino, you might be interested to learn this, Papa, he suspends cell phone use on all of his sets. And I was listening to Hugh Grant talk about how he's always wanted to be on a Tarantino film because he heard everyone hooks up. There's a lot more sex on a Tarantino set because no one has their phone, so they're talking to each other more.
That's hilarious. So, I mean, this show has some sexual moments. Actually, I do want to give some praise to I thought a nice side character was the brother. I thought he was going to be like a very just like a throwaway kind of, okay, I've got this douchey brother. And he actually ended up having some layers to him, which I liked. And that was one thing I did like about Amy and Danny's story is you know, Amy really wants, both of them want to have, they feel isolated and they want companionship. She's desperate and trying to give her business away so that she can be with her husband and her daughter and have a connection there. So, you know, that's her approach. And then Danny, you know, he never wants to be alone, and he was always trying to have his brother skip grades so they could be together. He obviously sabotaged his college career. I don't know if you've seen that yet, Matt, but like, you know, they both kind of go about it in different ways, and, you know, it leads, and you know, this show is constantly commenting on the consequences to behaviors. You know, so I thought that was always interesting, like this longing for companionship that both kind of have, that they both have very different lives, but are both very alone and sad.
Yeah.
You know, and then the one thing I did want to say, and this was the director was talking about, or the writer director was talking about, it was, you know, he wanted to buck the Asian stereotypes when it comes to parenting. And, you know, a lot of, like, there's some scenes with Amy especially, and, you know, she's complaining in couples therapy about her parents. And, you know, it's like, it was like kind of going down the old tropes, but of, you know, like cold Asian mother, cold Asian father. And then you like meet the parents and you realize that, like, that's not necessarily the case. And they are told that both characters are told that they're in different ways, that their parents are proud of them, that they love them, you know, but like that moment isn't kind of ceremonious and the point of the story, like it is with Crazy Rich Asians or Everything Everywhere All at Once. It just kind of happens, but then the story keeps going and you end up seeing like, oh no, like their problems are a result of like bad choices and selfish behavior. And like, that's why they're in the place that they're in. So it's like, you know, it's more nuanced than your parents. And I thought that was really, I thought that was really sound.
I think they do a good job too. It's easy to, I agree with you, Bob. It's easy to have those tropes of like, oh, the tiger mom, right? Or like the either like crazy involved or, you know, one of the moments that I really thought was interesting that I thought maybe it's inconsequential in the grand scheme of things, but I read a lot into it, was the fact that Ali Wong's character, and Ali Wong, I believe, is Vietnamese American. Mm-hmm. And she acknowledges the fact at one point, something about George, her husband, and it's like, well, you know, he's Japanese, and it's, oh well, right. He's Japanese, right? So we begin to see, like, you know, to make that claim of like, oh, the Asian American, there are Japanese Americans, Korean Americans, Vietnamese, and you can't lump any sort of cultural understanding even based on how things have been interpreted in Hollywood and TV. And I thought this started to create more context in what those familial relationships are like and the nuance and the complexity of it. I just thought that was really cool.
South and there's stereotypes.
South Park has a lot of takes on this. Yeah.
No, yeah. But I just to sort of reiterating what I was saying before, right? That I think that it was able to tackle the nuance of that really well. And I thought one of the other things that was really interesting, one of the sort of arcs that I thought was interesting was Stephen, I keep referring to him by his name. It's his name in the show is Danny.
His name is Danny.
Danny's getting back into the church, right? And it was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. What's funny is I don't know how much of this was the writer working with Stephen on this arc, but Stephen Yeun actually came from a kind of like that kind of Christian background. Like he grew up in the church of like that very, you know, hands it contemporary, sort of a contemporary Christian. He grew up in that. So for him to tap into that was like, he was like, that was super easy. Cause like, that's how I grew up. And I think that's a side of the quote unquote Asian American experience that isn't talked about. And I thought that was handled really, really well in the show. The nuance of that was handled well.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so he beat the guy in a game of pickup basketball, and then all of a sudden he's like the leader of their movement in church. I mean, is that?
Well, the guy lost all his credibility by melting down and, you know, basically punting the ball into the, you know, ocean or whatever. He you know, kind of like showed his card as his fraud. Yeah. You know, and Danny's the hero champion. I also, the show kind of does make you think like how much of this is real, how much of it is fantasy. It does kind of blur the lines because it does. Some things seem kind of hyper realistic, and then some things are kind of like fantasy. So it's like, oh, that's why I talk about like tonal. You're always kind of off balance with the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I saw some article just now and I was like looking some stuff up where it's like, the end makes both characters question their own reality. So it gets kind of transcendental there or.
Transcendental is a good way to put it. Yeah.
I do have a couple of complaints. So a couple of things, the cousin Isaac, I did not jive with that character. For him to be kind of the catalyst towards the end of the season, Matt, I know you still need to finish it, but I didn't like kind of his involvement in the plot.
David Cho. I mean, he's an artist and like a painter, not an actor, but I thought you did okay.
Was he an exit through the gift shop?
I don't know about that, but he's been in a lot of Bourdain episodes. He's like an LA artist and a close friend.
So there's a moment in the show that I had a beef with. But it's so there's this like raid on the house. So, you know, basically there's the bad guys are coming in. Our main characters are tied up and backed into a corner. And then all of a sudden, like the tripwire gets called or 911 gets called. And all of a sudden you got this like SWAT team that's coming in to like save the day. Like chaos is ensuing. And Danny's on the back porch with his brother. His brother tries to flee and like jump the fence. There's some suspense there with whether he gets killed or not. But then later in the episode, you know, there's this whole crime scene, tape everywhere, caution tape everywhere. And like Danny like slips out under this grate in the porch and just kind of like casually leaves the scene. And I'm like, this SWAT team going and like doing this whole, like there's just been this like massacre. There's just like suspects everywhere and they're not going to check like the grate in the ground. I just thought that was something that I was like, oh, come on. So that was something. And then there was also a scene. There was also just a plot point in the end of the season where, Amy is worried because the neighbor is still like very aggressively trying to find out who trampled his daisies. And there's like this whole like who done it? Like, I'm still on the lookout for these cars. Have you seen a white SUV? And it's like, bro, someone ran over your flowers like 2 years ago. Like, I just don't know how aggressive, you know, like, because it's a big point is she's trying to suppress the news getting out about like who drove the white SUV. And I'm like, okay, I don't think people would be this active in terms of trying to find that out. So those are a couple of my nitpicks that I had.
Who is the Naomi character, the one who kind of solved everything and kind of came at her with like, as like kind of an armchair.
Yeah. So she's an in-law.
I couldn't figure out that character I couldn't figure out that character where she came from, or I don't know if she was like working with Amy or just her neighbor, but she was working for I think she's working for Jordan. And because she was Jordan's sister-in-law and then Jordan, who's like the mega wealthy investor, they seem to get together. Yeah, they get together at some point, right? They're like, they're
so that's what it is. I think she's like, I don't know about anything sexually happening, but they're in-laws. That's what it is. And then she's a friend of Amy's that's like kind of making this bridge connection to trying to get this deal done.
And then she tries to undo her because maybe she's jealous of Amy and Jordan's connection. Do I have that right?
Well, she has nothing else going on. She's just a housewife that's bored and
gotcha. Metal. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I couldn't quite wrap my head around that or what was her import. Cause it seems like she'd figured it out. She's like, you were driving this, blah, blah, blah. I've connected all the dots and like, no, it wasn't me.
Here's this angry neighbor that just needs to get to the bottom of this because the magnolias were trampled.
Right. I mean, so what was this show funny?
I mean, it's dark comedy. It's dark comedy. Yeah. There were absolutely moments where it was funny. One of my favorites, I think it's in the trailer for the whole show, which is, I don't know when it happens exactly, but they finally like Amy and Danny meet up and they do that thing where like when you see two cop cars and like cop cars are like meeting up with each other and you're like, clearly you two are just like shooting the breeze here, guys. They like do that meet up where they're like, we're going to meet up, and they meet up and they're like talking to each other through their driver's side windows, and some guy's like, "Are you parking or what?" And both mm-hmm. of them stick their heads out, like, "Say it again. We are in the middle of a conversation here." So, like, both, right? Ali Wong and Steven Yeun, they come from comedy backgrounds. Like, it is, that is going to come through. So for me, there were absolutely moments that were funny, but it totally leans more on the drama side of things.
Drama,
not,
drama.
Not dissimilar from something Coen Brothers-esque in a way, depending on which Coen Brothers movie you're talking about.
I think Coen Brothers is a great cop. Maybe Burn After Reading or something kind of like silly and dark like that.
Yeah. Burn After Reading goes a little sillier toward the end, but I agree with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did like this. So they're at this this big art exhibit, a celebration of chairs. Jordan's father figure was like a brilliant designer or artist, and he had a whole series of chairs that were not.
It was George.
Oh, yeah, George. The George character. So yeah, his father was some famous designer artist, and he had a chair period. It's not meant for. She sits down on one of them. It's like, please don't sit on the art. a room full of chairs, you can't sit down. I mean, I thought that was pretty good, but yeah, a little.
The mother-in-law like saying this was designed out of the supple of my butt cheek or something like that. There's a little, you know, they give you a little butt cheek chair.
If this sweeps the Emmys for best comedy, I mean, it's
constantly being redefined. Yeah, apparently Elvis is a comedy, Matt. So.
Right.
I don't know. Well, I that's an interesting point. Like if it were nominated for any Emmys, or like, would it fall under the drama camp or would it fall under the comedy camp? You guys follow a lot more than I do. I feel like I feel like any body of people would more likely lean it towards a drama.
I think they're going to put it in comedy just because there's always less competition.
Really? Yeah.
If you can get away with passing as a comedy, you go comedy, which they can say it as dark comedy. There was a movie last year that was in the comedy category, and I was like, how is that a comedy?
Well, let me put it this. I'll put it this way, like, not to put it in strictly theater terms, right? But like the sort of overarching, very broad brushstroke of like what defines a tragedy versus what defines a comedy. A comedy is defined by everybody gets married in the end, and a tragedy is defined by everybody dies in the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
to me, this is more on the tragic side.
It ends in a hospital room with someone in a critical care unit.
There's love and there's hope. I don't know, but you guys, you very well could be right. I will eat my hat, and that's.
Totally I'm not dialed into the TV realm here. I just, you know, when you see something like Ted Lasso just sweeping the awards, and it's like, yeah, I enjoyed the first season, but I wasn't bowled over laughing my ass off.
I feel like I'm getting catfished with Ted Lasso, but I digress with that. What the?
I know.
But anyway, that's a whole different podcast.
We've been on record about our feelings about Ted Lasso, wholesome but overrated and not very funny. But this I think is great. It's well shot. There's some good drama. It's headlined by a very famous stand-up comedian, and a great actor in Steven Yeun. So I mean, I think
definitely has value.
Yeah,
would give it a recommend.
Yeah, I hope it sticks around. You know what I mean? Because like Netflix is like single serving entertainment, you know, to steal a line from Fight Club. It's you know, whereas HBO, they have the water cooler talk. It's The Last of Us every week. You know, you're so excited to watch the next episode. Yeah. Succession, everyone's talking about White Lotus. Well, that's a funny show. I think White Lotus should clean up. But it's just like with Netflix, it's like it's always on to the next. There's nothing sticks in people's brains. No,
I was going to say, Matt, do you feel like it's a case of quantity over quality?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. They're just like throwing everything against the wall, and then something sticks, and you know, it comes across my desk. We're like, you guys, you got to check out Beef. You know, I've heard it from you. I've heard it from the couple I work for. But it's just people are just consuming without really considering.
And that's the thing. I think, you know, we're here and we're getting into we're talking about themes, and we're talking about, you know, the nuanced takes of this show, which I think is well thought out. And then, but it's like that's, it feels weird to be on this platform where people are just chugging, you know, they're chugging beer versus sipping wine. And yeah, it's like, are they even catching these nuanced takes? Or because you've watched six episodes in a row to say that you finished it over the weekend, you know? So it's like, it is weird. Cause like Netflix is more for that, and HBO you're kind of watching, or maybe you rewatch a second time before you watch the new episode. And so there's that kind of like weekly run out, the episodic, and it leads to more anticipation. It leads to more rewatching. It leads to more dissection of the content versus binge and on to the next.
There are different business models. I mean, there is a dopamine kick, I think, from completion percentage. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you can go to a house party and be like, oh, I've seen this, I've seen that, I've seen this. Like, oh, have you seen Squid Game? Have you seen Beef? Have you seen Ali Wong's new special? It's just, you're just like listing off like a resume, but mm-hmm. you're not like, well, did you enjoy them? Oh, I don't know, I was on my phone most of the time. Or no, I was kind of doing laundry. It's just on in the background. It's like that. It's just like junk food. And like, you really gotta, I'm watching this show, and I put down three episodes, and I'm like, you know, I kind of want to watch Midnight Run. I've never seen it before. I just listened to a podcast about De Niro films. I was like, oh, that sounds a lot of fun. So I threw that on, and then something, I saw some, it was great. Very, very good. Uh-huh. I can't believe I'd never seen it before. The guy from Beethoven's in it, and it's a kind of like almost like a Tommy Boy, you know, buddy movie. But it's just like, I get so distracted with things like, oh, the outlaw Josie Wales was a big inspiration for Red Dead Redemption. Oh, I've never seen that. You know, it's just, do I really want to just binge a show when there's so, you know, much out there?
I'll say this. It's kind of interesting you're bringing up this concept of like the two different approaches to television production, which is the more classic, what you guys are talking about, right? Because right before streaming, it was all episodic. Oh, it's on did you see it on Tuesday? Did you mm-hmm. see it on, right? And people are, it's that water cooler talk you guys were talking about, like, oh my God, did you see it on Wednesday? Did you see it last night? Versus Netflix being the like, we'll just give it to all of you. And I remember that the CEO of Netflix was interviewed, this was like years ago, like when House of Cards was just coming out. And he was asked about that. Like, why are you, like, why don't you do it, you know, one at a time, like most television? And they were like, oh, well, we view it as like a book. Like, you know, when you get a book, you don't get a chapter a week, you get the whole thing. And it's interesting because I feel like they dove headfirst into that, but maybe that kind of decreases the social aspect of television, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, it is that water cooler. Oh my God, did you see this episode? And you can create that dialogue of what do you think is going to happen versus what you were talking about. Oh, did you see it? Yeah, I guess I watched it while doing laundry. Anyway, you should watch it or not. I don't care. Whereas you don't get as much immediacy of what's coming down the pike as you do get with things like things on HBO Max or now Max or whatever, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why HBO is king. And, you know, in today's modern parlance and social media,
they have the public of focus. They have the
Yeah, I mean, how many meme accounts were created on a weekly basis after each episode of Last of Us or all Succession. These shows come out? There's like, you know, in our social media times, you got to give the show a chance to get viral. You know what I mean? If you just I don't know. There's no dialogue or there's no meme culture or Twitter discourse.
Except
just
for
comes and goes.
Except for I Think You Should Leave, which is the most memed viral show.
Absolutely.
And that is, I think, where we should stick the landing on our conversation is Netflix, you know, binging has more to be desired, except for when it comes to I Think You Should Leave.
I mean, Netflix and chill. I mean, people are just having sex and just, you know, they just want something just to kill the time.
Sex
anyway.
In a hotel room after a lot of road rage. Andrew can identify. That's why he brought us this show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It all circles as long as it's back to that.
As long as it's on the floor.
I got one more question for you, Andrew. Never mind. Disregard.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Andrew. It's always a pleasure. And I hope you enjoy your porch beer.
Birds are chirping, sun setting there in sweet Michigan.
We got it. Yeah. We got pure Michigan here. I want to see you with the Lightning Kugels next time I see you. Let's get you on two more times so we can get you in animated form, the Five Timers Club. And I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. And if you guys ever see something that I haven't seen yet, and you want to assign me to it so we can pod, I'm happy to do it. Just let me know.
Always a great guest, man. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the suggestion. So with that, thank you guys for coming and hanging. I really enjoyed us getting kind of into a little broader when it comes to the scope of television today. But don't forget to wash your hands, stay safe. We'll see you
down the road.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, hey, thanks, Andrew, man. That was a lot of fun,
man.
Let's go out with some bags.
Shouldn't have had such a sloppy mud pie.
Oh, man.